Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
We're going to talk about sheep now and art, because I'm joined by an artist and a shepherd, but that's just one person. She's both Orla Barry. Orla, you're very welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Orla, you and your sheep are the subject of this kind of quietly amazing new documentary, Notes from Sheepland. I was saying to you, if Andy Warhol made a film about sheep, this would be it. So I have a lot of questions about you and about sheep. Will we get a bit of backstory first? So you are actually a farmer's daughter, but you left the land before you came back to it. How did you feel about farming as a child growing up?
I wasn't that keen on it, yeah. I must say. I remember being thrown in a pile of nettles and told to stay there until I'd finished picking all the black currants off the plant. I can remember driving cattle from an out farm 20 kilometres from where I lived and getting to the village and kind of crouching down and hoping nobody had seen me through the village. I was embarrassed to be doing that job. And so I pretty much ran away from it.
Where did the road take you?
So I went first to Dublin, then to Belfast, to art college. Then I did an MA in Holland, in Haarlem and Amsterdam. And then I ended up in Brussels via. Yeah. And I stayed there for 16 years.
As a working artist.
As a working artist, yeah.
So when and why did you come back to Ireland?
I came back in 2009, just totally missed the countryside really more than anything else. I loved Brussels and loved Belgium, loved the art scene there and everything. But I just really, really miss the countryside, my family.
And you say that a layer of anxiety lifted when you came back to Ireland.
Yeah. I think in hindsight, I was in some kind of culture shock when I was there. And I didn't realise it was very subconscious, but I suppose I was fluent in French, so I was... You know, that was fine. And I picked up Dutch along the way as well. But I didn't realise, you know, trying to express myself in another language was so kind of throw you off track all the time. And like a good example would be like if you'd pick up the phone to make a professional phone call in Ireland, there'd still be a bit of banter like, how are you or something like that. And I'd go, oh, John, how are you? And they'd go, what do you want? You know, it's like very different kind of setup. So when I came back here, it was only then that I realised like that I'd been living for 16 years in this kind of constant state of anxiety that could I find the right word? I already can't in English, so can I in French? And just everything felt more normal. I could understand what was going on around me and people just seemed to... You know, I knew what they were going to do and what they were going to say easily. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to think that like living abroad or anything or that foreigners are bad people. But actually, I had a really interesting conversation a few weeks ago here with Robert Sheehan, the actor, who was also moved back and is kind of down in the depths of West Cork now. But he was saying like that basically he thinks there's yourself and there's your environment and the two of them go together to make up who you are.
Yeah.
So that he realised he was a different person and maybe more authentically himself once he was back in his own kind of milieu.
Yeah.
So you went back and I think you took a bit of the father's farm. Why sheep?
I don't know. I mean, there was two of us. So my partner at the time, Elle Steedforst, is also a visual artist. And I think we started doing organic courses. We needed an extra income. I was teaching part-time in SETU as well as being an artist. So we went and talked to people in Chagas and people like that. And I remember one guy looking at us and kind of going... Two women maybe should grow salads. And I was like, there's no way I'm standing in a polytunnel all day. And then somebody mentioned sheep. So it was kind of like, I suppose that's the good thing about being an artist. and starting farming is you're a bit idealistic. Yeah. So I just went off up north and bought 30 clean pedigree cleans. I went with my uncle, who's the who I call the godfather of sheep, Jeffrey. Right. And he bought 20 and I bought 30. And we were kind of left in this space with about 200 female sheep. And we had to pick out what we wanted out of it. And I mean, my experience was pretty minimal at that stage. And then when we got back to the yard with the 50 sheep, me and my uncle had to sort out the 20 and the 30. And okay. I think he thought if he let me pick the ones that I wanted, he'd be left with the best ones because I was so inexperienced. But he still says to me now that I took the best 30.
You got the cream of the crop. Yeah. And it's fair to say then you kind of became obsessed with them. The film is full of these lingering shots of sheep and you actually do realise that they are beautiful. But sinister at times, like when there's a whole load of them just looking into the camera at you. What is it about sheep that's so kind of magic for you?
Well, I mean, Cara Holmes is the director of the film and we talked a lot, you know, about sheep and she didn't know that much about it. And I kept going on about their eyes and so she kind of picked up on that. But you asked me what is it about sheep?
Yeah.
Can I explain? I mean, I think like that only came to me as, like, you know, you're just existing in the world and living and you bought these sheep and then you have them and then you discover, you know, by working with them that, you know, you discover everything about them. And I didn't know the whole thing of pedigree livestock showing and things like that. And, you know, I mean, even lambing, I'd worked two years with who I call the King Shepherd. So to learn lambing and stuff like that. But, I mean, everything just, what's the word, you know,
So is it you were surviving initially, like, but then as you kind of found your feet, you start to see something deeper.
Yeah, well, I had to see it. There was nothing to, you know, I had to, like, just exist and survive in it. And we were in at the deep end, like we hadn't a clue what we were doing, really.
No, it sounds like he got help, though, the King Shepherd and the Godfather Shepherd.
Sheep.
What
and then I also
the two ye arriving, these two kind of bohemian artist types arriving into the sheep scene?
Well, I mean, that's quite interesting because, you know, people ask me, you know, a lot about, you know, women farmers and being a woman in a man's world. And I remember going to the mart with Else and I can't remember what, had we bought a ram or something like that? And we were standing in the, you know, the office where you pay. Mm. And this guy said to me, actually, it was him who had bought my ram. That was it. And he said to me, I bought your ram, you know, and who's she? Is she your sister? And I said, no, she's not. She's my partner. And he went, your partner in what? And I said, my partner in everything. And I was like, getting really annoyed. But he just looked so perplexed. He just didn't get it at all. So, yeah, but we were kind of accepted into the community pretty well. And actually having the sheep and farming and everything, I kind of refound old friends from school. I mean, it felt like I had my own little hedge school. Like I had the Godfather of Sheep, I had the King Shepherd, I had the sophisticated shepherd who taught me then everything about showing sheep and stuff like that. So
tell me about the showing sheep scene, because I think people might be unaware of this. So there's a whole kind of, like people might have seen that movie Best in Show, like about the dog show scene. There's a fairly active show sheep scene.
Yeah. Well, that's when I started to kind of understand that there was this parallel language between the, like, livestock exhibiting and art exhibiting. I mean, even the words are the same. So you exhibit the sheep, you're called an exhibitor. You wear white coats, like a gallery to show off the animal. You know, you go to auctions.
And the sheep are quite pampered. They're well looked after, aren't they? Like I see people cutting them really finely, like with scissors. This is not your rough sheep shearing, like it's like finessing the coat and everything.
Yeah, and actually in my breed, in the clins, it's not that, like we're supposed to show them quite naturally, so it's not as, let's say, as perfecting as, actually okay. I had swartless sheep first when I started, and they take an awful lot of care to show them because they've black fleeces and you have to kind of keep them black so people keep them indoors, or they, you know, they clip off the sun-tipped fleece.
Yeah. And so then what are you looking for in a good show sheep? Is it looks-based, the whole thing, yeah?
No, I mean, there's the production side of it as well. So they need to have, you know, they need to be not overshot or undershot their mouth. They need to be up on their pasterns. They need to have a good back.
They need to be what?
They need to be up on their pasterns.
You'll have to explain that to me. Okay.
You know, that needs to be straight. They don't need to be falling on their hooves because they have to, you know, climb hills, and they need to be able to get around to get the ewes, especially the rams.
Okay.
And then there's what's interesting about breeding sheep as well, and that's also the art side of it, is that it's a very subjective thing. So one judge will pick a certain sheep, another judge. So even in the Booker Prize, you could compare the two.
Yeah.
You know, it's so there's, you know, there's the whole looks part of it. Then there's even down to the detail with the clins is the size of the ears. So the judge will come along and he'll put the ears in his hand, and if the point of the ear comes out too far, he might not like that. But, you know, another judge mightn't even look at that, for example. You know,
okay, yeah. So like, is there a lot of unhappy campers at the end of a day of sheep showing, like people who think they were done, like, yeah?
Well, I think there's a fairly good vibe in showing sheep. I think people just, you know, accept that next year they might win with a different judge.
And you've seem quite attached to the sheep as, I won't say as people, like, but as individuals. Like, you have names, you have relationships with individual sheep.
Well, we did play that up a little bit for the film.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
But I do have, you know, over the years I've had the Log, Gillian, God, I can't remember. Big Betty. I mean, they just get names because something happens.
Yeah.
Like the Log was just so heavy, we couldn't turn her up, you know, so she got, oh shit, we have to turn up the Log again, or, you know.
And have they personalities? Because we imagine that sheep, like, kind of, you know, are like sheep, that, like, you know, one guy walks along, they all follow him, and that's it. But are they all individuals, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And some more enthralling than others.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did the art start developing in conjunction with the sheep then?
I guess I was so drowned in, like, just trying to learn all that and do things that I started to, you know, understand that I couldn't make my work about anything else. And also, I think as I learned, I kind of felt a little bit like an anthropologist in my own community a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you start to understand why you are the way you are, as well as everybody else, and how you've been brought up, and why farming is the way it is. But what I think is
before
amazing,
we get to farming, yeah. Why are you the way you are?
Well, I mean, I can't. I mean, I guess you're brought up with a certain work ethic and yeah. things like that, and. Within a certain community as an artist wasn't always easy, because in a certain way are you born an artist? I don't know, but
yeah.
I definitely felt a little bit like an outsider in my community when I was young. I don't anymore, which is strange.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Sorry.
And that, what were you?
Like, that's not a fair question to ask anyone. Why are you the way you are? that would stump the best
well,
of
I
us.
Managed,
don't
managed,
ask
okay.
me. So you talk about, like, that you have two roles now.
Yeah.
A shepherd and an artist. What do you get out of each of them?
Well, I mean, the most interesting thing for me is that when I was younger and living in Brussels, I you know, you'd finish one project and be thinking, oh my God, what's my next project going to be about? And, you know, whereas now I feel like I have, there's so much in this outside of the sheep. There's ecology, there's farming, there's, you know, feminism, there's so many areas of it that I could go into after this. There's also mining my own village, the area I grew up in. I quite like the idea of the local in comparison to the what's the word I'm trying, the global, and so I've made performances, I've made films, I've written a book, and all of it comes out of, you know, what I lived. It comes out of lived experience. It doesn't come out of research in books and things like that. And that's also something that I learned about while doing, you know, that lived experience and the personal is political and all that.
So do a lot of artists make art that is kind of about art, really, in a way, like that they're in this...
Well, Andy Warhol does. But,
It does feel, in a weird way, you know, people would say, like, art is, like, about truth and authenticity and everything. Is the sheep a more real thing for you, though?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I do have this... it's really tough doing both, because I'm often on the road and things like that, especially recently. But the thing that's really important for me is the fact that I can go from one world to the other.
Yeah.
So it's like one world feeds the other, but I can also run away from one world to the other. Like, for example, this morning I was out, I had to go and see the sheep and everything before I came up here to do this. But I can, you know, you can run away. I mean, the art world is a certain place, and you can run away from it.
Yeah, so you can run away from both to the other. Yeah. There's it's a very simple thing, and most people have probably seen this before, but I think I hadn't seen it like it's so starkly. There's a thing of a lamb being born and then you carrying the lambs out by their legs and the sheep following you. But like, it's the most visceral kind of, the most pure life thing you've ever seen. I can imagine that. I'd say blows the crap out of any art, like, to watch something like that.
Well, the primal thing was really strong. I mean, just the connection with the land and the animals. And like, I had an injury while we were shooting the film, actually, with Cara, and I panicked and kind of had to sell the flock. And it's like selling your patrimony. So it's like selling an artwork because you've been working on it for 10 years. But I managed to keep a ram I had bred and some, and all, I kept the lambs. There was about 20 lambs, and I bought 5 new shearlings to put with my ram so I could keep the bloodline. So I kind of skipped a year lamb, and I could, you know, I had to wait till they kind of grew up. And I was lambing again this year. So
it was amazing. Hard physical labour, is it?
Yeah. And I'm getting older and I'm doing it on my own now as well. But what is amazing is just how disconnected, even in that year, even though I was still out, you know, kind of looking at the sheep and planning next year and stuff, but how disconnected I got just in that time. Because the difference between how people are in nature is, it's kind of recreation for people now.
Yeah.
And it's totally different working. Like, if I go for a walk, and I actually stopped walking when I started farming, because you're walking around all day anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just a totally different connection than working in the land.
I can imagine.
And working with animals. Yeah.
And then there's the system, which you talk about. And you say that working in the system has made you worried about the system. So before we get to meat, wool, for example.
Yeah.
Worthless,
unfortunately. And I made a piece of work in 2022 in the RHA gallery, where I shipped 2 years of wool, which was about a pile of about 300 kilos, into the gallery. So the smell kind of permeated the space and everything. And I also, and that was the interesting thing as well, because if you want to do this type of thing, usually you have to do research and then go looking for the person. But I sold my wool to John Conran from Rathnure. And I suddenly thought, where does this wool go and what happens? And so I just phoned him up and I said, hi, John, you know, do you mind if I come up and talk to you about this? So I love that way of researching. Yeah. And he told me that he actually took out his calculator and calculated it in front of me because he was talking about how much wool was worth in 1945 in shillings. And I said, John, could you turn that into euros for me? And he just sat there and turned it into old pennies. And so in 1945, wool was worth about 2.66 a kilo. And now it's worth 20 cents a kilo, 13 times less between 1945 and now. Yeah. And he said that even in 99, so he went out with Bor Truk Dawla at the time out to China and made deals with the Chinese to sell wool.
Yeah.
And so even in 1999, it was worth 150 a kilo.
Yeah, should it barely be worth shipping to China now, would it?
No, well, he had a good business going on at the time and was very happy with it, but that's all finished now. Yeah. And I've no idea. I mean, those things come round, but this doesn't seem to be coming around, you know, coffee, oil, corn, you know, but this just seems to be staying.
And then you talk about the production of meat.
Yeah.
And the kind of criteria of if you're producing meat, you're producing it for packets, basically.
Yeah. And that's another interesting then research by doing was that I was in a farmer's, like a sheep discussion group in Chagas. So everyone laughs when I say a sheep discussion group. But they took us to Camolin meat plant and, you know, we were shown around the meat plant and, you know, the manager told us about how what great deals they had done with Deleuze in Belgium and stuff like that. And, you know, he explained why we had to produce lambs that kill out at 22 kilos, because they want the chops to fit in packages that will stack on top of each other in supermarkets. So you might have noticed if you go to a butcher to get lamb chops, they'll be bigger because they don't need to do that. So they're trying to make the packages kind of come in around six euros. Otherwise, people walk past them in the supermarket. So they've done all this research that people will
and
buy
it. Goes
it
right if, back the value chain then that you need to, the chop needs to be a certain size. Yeah. When you, yeah.
And they don't pay you. If it's over the weight, they don't pay you for the kilos. So you're just given the factory meat for free.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's extraordinary stuff, isn't it? So what's next for you now?
Well, I've just done a big show in Belgium in the Museum of Contemporary Art in Hornu. And I'm going to play Spin Spin Scheherazade there, which is a performance piece, and that's going to Beton Salon in Paris in 2025 as well. So the work's been translated into French, and I'm kind of, the last 2 years or so, I've been gathering interviews and other research about the anti-nuclear rallies in Carnsore, which is very close to where I live.
Right.
And that kind of, if I was younger, I'd probably have a sheep zoo because every time I go somewhere else, I discover another breed of sheep and another interesting story about how they, why they exist and how they came about. And so I, you know, this morning I was trying to think what am I actually going to do? And I'm thinking the sheep zoo and the current store at Nuclear Rally might.
You have to do the sheep zoo. And all the, because
well,
now,
then
that,
I need some
now
young
that I'm an expert,
and
listen, you'd find young people like, they'd find it very, very, what's the word the young people use these days? Fulfilling, isn't it?
Yeah.
And with all the different breeds of sheep and everything, and tell, that's fantastic. There has to be a sheep zoo. So the film is called Notes from Sheepland and it's in certain Irish cinemas this weekend. It's in Dublin's IFI and Lighthouse cinemas. It's in Triskel in Cork. It's in Galway's Palace cinema. It's in QFT in Belfast and ARC in Wexford too. And I know you're doing some Q&As around it at some of the locations. So people can find out about that. And your website then is orlabarry.be, not .ie for people. Okay, Orla Barry, thank you very much. That was
very
enlightening.
Much.
So listen, Sinead here emails in to say there are shows and everything. I'm a beekeeper and the honey shows are cutthroat, apparently. All right, we'll take a break.